here at KOGT. And again, glad to have as our guest in the studio this morning, Dr. Calvin Parker. We say good morning, sir.
Good morning, Gary.
And how are you?
Been busy.
Yeah, been busy. You've been busy besides COVID? Has it been a lot of illnesses out there or what?
I would say most of my issues have been just dealing with COVID.
COVID,
you know, we have the routine stuff. Summer illness tends to slow down, and so we kind of have a different group of patients coming through the office in the summertime. But really, it's been a lot of COVID, and most of it is question, answers, concerns, worries, more discussion than doing a lot of diagnosing. But that's where most of my concerns really have been.
Well, that's certainly kind of our case, too, with the way things have gone here lately. Of course, the numbers appear to be going up. We don't know. I'm going to let you tell us whether or not are they going up because more people are being tested, or are we getting a more of a spread? And in fact, I'm sitting here with all my stuff, and I'm sitting there thinking, where in the world do we start with this conversation? Where would you like to start with this conversation? What's on your mind right now?
Well, since you called me yesterday, you know, I started thinking, my gosh, there's so much to talk about. Where would we start? What would we talk about? And I mentioned this on a previous conversation that, you know, in life, when things get chaotic, when things get crazy, when things get overwhelming, I've always tried to just take a deep breath, step back, and think about the basics. You know, there's a lot of things you and I could argue about, or me and the experts could argue about, but there are certain truths that are just, we just know they're true. Okay. And so that might be a good place to start.
Let's do it.
First off, we know that we have a virus that is real. You know, there's some fringe people that think that maybe it's not, or that it was manufactured or so forth. But we know for a fact that the virus is real. It's out there. And we know that it's contagious. Some of the disagreement comes with how contagious is it? How is it spread? But we do know that it's contagious. So we got to take some precautions on trying to keep it from the most vulnerable people and keep it from spreading. We also know that in certain populations, the virus can be deadly. And we've seen that in our own county, right? We've got 3 deaths of Orange County residents that are attributed to this virus. Doesn't sound like a large number to some people, but if you're the family of one of those 3, it is very serious. And the number seems way bigger than 3 when it affects your family.
Right.
We also know that hospitalizations are up. So you made a mention about, you know, cases are going up. Is that because we're testing more, or is that because the disease is more prevalent? Well, one of the things to look at is hospitalizations. And if hospitalizations are up, the disease is more than likely up. So I would argue against anybody that there's more disease out there than we had a week ago and more than we had a few weeks ago. And how do we know hospitalizations are up? Well, when you have one of the most recognized medical centers in the world as the Texas Medical Center in Houston, and a hospital with the name Texas Children's is now opening their doors to admit adult patients, that's a pretty good sign that hospitalizations are up.
Right.
And if you look at the data, the ICU beds are becoming pretty full in Houston. And that's why their county has mandated mask use. We've seen that in Jefferson County, right?
Right.
Stuff kind of falls downhill. If Houston's beds get full, it's harder for us to get our people to Houston if and when we need it.
Right.
And so I think we've seen a slight uptick or usually when you see a mandate like that, usually it means, hey, our resources are getting close to being tapped out. I think that's what you saw in Houston. I think, although I haven't had the discussion with the people in Jefferson County, I think that was part of the decision when they start seeing hospitals start to fill up. Hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Let's see what we can do to slow this down. That's where the real danger comes in, is when we outgrow our resources. Right, when we don't have enough hospital beds, enough physicians, enough equipment to take care of the sickest of the sick, that's when we start to lose people that we shouldn't lose. Okay, the disease itself, unfortunately, like a lot of diseases, like influenza, like heart disease, like diabetes, you know, people are going to die from certain diseases. There are vulnerable people out there that when they get exposed to this, we may not be able to do anything to save them. What we don't want to happen is the people that in a normal situation where we had the resources to help them, we're not able to help them. So that's where the medical people and the people that make the decisions with medical care, that's when we start to get really worried, is when we start to see, hey, we're getting close to our maximum capacity. And I think that's what you're seeing in Houston. They still have room to grow, but as they get closer, they get a little bit more worried and they tend to put the clamps down a little bit. And that's what we see. So, you know, basic things, just to summarize, you know, where we started this, is the virus real? Yes, it's real. Is it contagious? Yes, it's contagious. Is it spreading? Yes, it's spreading. Now, we can argue all the other facts, how to slow it down, what do we do about it, but those things are pretty basic, and I think that's where we start.
Where do you think we are? Because some people say we're just now peaking for phase one. Are we in the second part of this thing? Where are we at, in your opinion?
It's kind of a gray area to me. I don't think that we ever peaked.
Okay.
You know, if you ask me, it seems like it's just kind of slowed down a little bit. You know, the rate slowed down a little bit, and now we're seeing it rise again. I just see it as one big wave. I don't see a first wave and a second wave. To me, it just seems like one big wave. Other people will have different opinions, but definitely the disease numbers have gone up. We knew this was going to happen. I mean, we talked about that on one of the other shows, that we knew that when you open things back up, you're going to see a rise in the cases. There's no way around that. You just want to match the rise with the resources you have, and you want to try to slow it down as much as you can so that you can stay ahead of it.
Whether or not we're in what they call phase one or phase two, or as you say, we've continued to rise, there's been so much talk about whether it be a phase two or phase three by the time we get to December and Christmas time, that schools are actually taking 6 weeks off in preparation for this. So are you pretty confident in what they're thinking for the end of the year?
Who knows, Gary?
Yeah.
You know, this is, some people call this novel coronavirus, meaning a new virus. It's new. We don't know. Everything that we see in retrospect is pretty factual. Anything going forward is just someone's guess, okay?
Yeah.
So people have different theories on what's going to happen as we get into late summer and into the fall, but they're all theoretical. We don't know what's going to happen. It's a new virus. We've never seen it. We don't know how it's going to act. We don't know if there's going to be one big wave, two waves, three waves. It definitely, I just don't see how we're not dealing with this in the fall in some form or fashion. How, I'm not sure, but the way things are going right now, it just seems like we're in this for the long haul.
Is it because of the more human contact in the holiday season, or because of the cooler temperatures and not having the heat? Or is it both?
Are you talking about why there might be a spike in the fall?
Right.
I think it's a little bit of everything. It's people being congregated back together again. Probably has something to do with temperature. Has to do with human nature. You know, as we see an improvement, we all let our guard down. And, you know, I think that some of that probably has to do with the numbers we have now. You know, we've just gotten so numb to the warnings, and you go so long without seeing a big spike that you start to second guess what you're doing, or do you need to do it? Or it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You know, after a while, you just get numb to hearing it. So people get so tired of hearing all the restrictions that we want to put on them that they just at some point just kind of ignore it and let loose. And I think part of that probably plays a role into what's happening with these recent numbers.
I think the cried wolf is what we're getting a lot of right now, because I mean, when you literally have people say that this is nothing but a hoax, I can't, you know, it's like people didn't just die you know, without a reason. So, you know, the ones that say that, and then there's a lot of people that really believe that.
I'm speechless with that, but
yeah.
You know, this is, you know, not to make light of the situation, but let me just give you an example of what goes on daily in my office. And I'm sure it happens in other businesses as well. But, you know, people will come to me for my advice, I give it to them and they don't follow it.
Yeah.
And I just, it every day, that's part of the fatigue, the mental fatigue I'm going through, is that I want to say, why do you even come waste your time and give me your money for my advice when you don't listen to me anyway?
Right.
And so I get some of that. Because sometimes I'm just as hard-headed when I go to the mechanic. You know, he tells me what my car needs, and oh, that's probably not what I need. You know, I'm gonna make my own decision. So, I'm not bad-mouthing people. It's human nature to do that. But it's, you know, if I could get one or two messages across today, there's no way this is a hoax. I mean, right. I wish people would quit saying that.
Right.
You know, we can argue the severity and how we need to slow it down, but this virus is real. You know, one of the three patients that passed away is one of mine. He was in my office just a few weeks before. And so to me, it's very personal. I don't like the fact that this is extending any further than it is, but it's in front of us. We have to deal with it.
Right.
And, you know, I'm here trying to spread the message to do what I can do to try to slow this down a little bit.
Right.
So...
Is the it seems like, and again, this is what you hear from the reports from the health department and stuff, but a lot of the rise and a lot of what we've seen, the uptick, has, it seems to be that the younger people are getting more involved. They're the ones that are kind of spreading this around. Is this because of the summer activity, them not really caring or adhering to the warnings? Or is it true at all?
So if you look at some of the spikes that have happened in our county, so far, to my knowledge, we have not seen spikes occur because of restaurants. We haven't seen spikes occur because of church gatherings. We haven't seen spikes occur because of retail stores. What we have seen is we've seen some spikes and some outbreaks when there's been large social gatherings. Some of these gatherings have included a younger population.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a lot of factors, such as, you know, a lot of the young kids are asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic, so they don't know they have it. Young kids are bulletproof. You don't see a lot of kids wearing
right.
masks.
Right.
Sometimes young kids are, and adults, you know, engaged in activities where you lose some of your self-control, right? And so all of a sudden, as the day goes on, your ability to socially distance is not as important. So the cases that we've seen have been where people have come from out of town or gone out of town, got exposed, brought it back to a social gathering, and then from that point it just spreads like wildfire back home to the family, to schoolmates, to club mates. And that's kind of what we've seen in our county. So we go back to the very first conversation we had. What can we do to stop this? One of them is, if you're going to participate in these large social gatherings, or if you're going to be in social environments, either keep your distance or have a mask on.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that we can do to try to slow it down.
So let's move on to the old mask category, because, you know, does any mask work? I mean, we've seen pictures of these boxes on the 95 mask that say, you know, this does not prevent COVID-19. So where are we with the mask? What should we wear? Tell us your thoughts there.
So we can argue how effective they are. As a physician, I'm telling you, my belief, they have to help some. Okay, we can argue how much. There's got to be some reduction in the transmission with any kind of mask that's covering your face. So back to the basics. It's a respiratory illness. It lives in our respiratory tract. It comes out of our body through our breath, through coughing, sneezing, secretions. If we can minimize the amount of secretions that are shooting across the room, it's got to help. It's got to. You can't convince me otherwise.
No matter what the material is.
So different materials stop different things, right? Okay. So if you have a mask made out of a T-shirt, it's very porous. It's not going to keep aerosol particles away, but it's going to keep large particles of sputum from coming out in a cough or a sneeze.
Okay.
The surgical masks are a little bit better than the t-shirts or the bandanas, and then the N95s are better than that. N95 mask, I don't know if you have you ever put one on?
Yeah.
They're quite uncomfortable.
Yes, they are.
Yep. And so you don't see many people wearing those. And one of the problems with those is people just won't keep them on. They're so uncomfortable, it's hard to breathe, they're tight. And so if you have a mask that you're not going to hardly wear, that doesn't do any good anyway. The N95 mask is made to keep out 95% of the aerosol particles that are in the air. So it is better than just a plain surgical mask or a cotton t-shirt mask or bandana mask. So they have to help some. Okay, do they stop everything? Of course not.
Yeah.
Okay, but a little bit's better than nothing. And so the mask primarily keeps you from passing it to somebody else. It keeps particles from coming out of your mouth into somebody else's face. Okay, if stuff's in the air and you're wearing a cotton mask, you're going to probably breathe some of it in. So it doesn't stop everything, but it stops the largest of particles, which is better than nothing.
Right. Okay. So so better than nothing with the mask. Now, the taking your temperature, you know, the old forehead thing, we've seen, in fact, I know for a fact there was one case where the young lady did not have a temperature, but yet tested positive for the COVID. So how much are you a fan of taking temperatures before you let people in your business or that type of thing?
It's kind of like the mask. It's better than nothing. It's not perfect. Yeah. None of these measures that we're trying to do are perfect. We are trying to do the small things that we can do to, you know, even if it keeps one or two cases out.
Right.
So most people who are infected with the virus are going to have some fever. It doesn't mean early on you're going to have fever. Doesn't mean everybody's going to have fever. But there, even if you pick up a few people and with that method, it's better than nothing. So I understand why we're doing it. I understand why it's recommended. Is it perfect? No, nothing's perfect.
What temperature does it have to be to become, you know, I mean, is it anything above normal, or is it above 100? What is it?
Well, you know, 100 above 100.4, above 100, basically, for most people is kind of what most people are following. But like I said, this is so crazy, and it's so there's so many variables and everything that happens. You can make an argument. You can give me any scenario, and two people can go back and forth that we didn't handle it the right way. So, like I said, there's some very basic things that we probably ought to be doing, and taking temperatures is just one way of cutting a few people out.
When they give you the test, and I haven't had it done to me, but I've seen it done, it looks like they're swabbing your brain. What exactly are they swabbing and testing?
So that's a good topic to discuss, because there's a lot of misinformation about the testing, and even in my daily work, I see where people are using the test the wrong way. Back when I started practicing medicine, you couldn't get a test unless the doctor ordered it. Okay? I'm not talking about that kind of test, but just any test, right? In order to get some testing, you had to go to the doctor. There's some reason behind this, because no test is perfect. The public seems to have this belief that testing is perfect, right? That's what we all want. We want a test that says, yes, I have it, no, I don't, and I can make decisions based on that.
Right.
Whether we're dealing with COVID or whether we're dealing with the flu, whether we're dealing with some cancer markers that we're testing on patients, no test is perfect. So there's always a degree of it says positive, but you don't have it. It says negative, but you really do have it. So in order for the test to be as accurate as we can make it, you have to select the right people to be tested. And that increases the accuracy of the test. If you take any test and just throw it at a general population, the accuracy is going to go down. If you pick the right patients, the accuracy goes up. So the best advice I can tell someone is talk to your provider. Let someone who's got a little more knowledge than you, a little more training than you, decide what test is best and do you need it, And at what timing do you need it? What we see right now is all these places offering tests, and people say, oh gosh, I got to go get tested, and they just go grab a test, any test they can get,
right,
and come back with an answer. And, you know, I've seen patients that just knew they had the disease, it comes back negative, and I'm thinking, yeah, you probably got it, or the opposite. There's two tests that we're using mainly. One of them is the test you're asking about, which is the nasal test. Okay, it's a nasal pharyngeal swab. They take basically a long Q-tip and they stick it not just in the front of your nose, but they go all the way back to your nasopharynx. It's quite uncomfortable. If you ask anybody who's had it done, it does not feel good to stick a Q-tip that far back in your nose.
Right.
You're also supposed to leave it back there for an extended period of time, 15 or 20 seconds, spin it around. You can imagine how uncomfortable that would be. So for the test to be accurate, you have to do it the right way, go the right depth, stay in the right amount of time for the results to be as accurate as we can get them. That test is testing for the virus itself. It's testing for genetic material of the virus in your nasal cavity at that time. So if you want to know if you have active virus in your body at this minute, you have to do the nasal test. Okay.
Right.
Now, I have heard reports that some people are doing a swab inside your cheek, but it has to be a swab to check for genetic material. Those tests they have to go to a lab and they have to be run, and it takes a day or two or three to get the results back. The other test that people are running out and getting is a blood test. Okay. The blood test is completely different. The blood test is checking for antibodies in your blood. And what that's doing is it's looking backwards in time. It's looking retrospectively and saying, has my body seen this infection? And if so, has my body built up immunity to it? Well, if you think about it, that test has limitations. So if I gave you corona right now here in the studio, and then you run this afternoon to your doctor and get a blood test, and it says negative, well, that doesn't mean you don't have it, right?
Right.
It takes days, sometimes over a week, for your body to build up these antibodies for us to see them. So the blood test has very limited usage for an acute infection, but you see people rushing out, getting the test, and then telling everybody they're negative. They may be negative, they may not. And so those are the two tests, a nasal test, a blood test. They both look at different things. People get a false sense of security, or they get false information if they don't understand how the test works and what the limitations are of the test. So I'm just a big fan that, you know, if you're concerned, you need to talk to your doctor so that you get the right test and so that the results are interpreted correctly. But unfortunately, it's like me going to the mechanic. You know, I think I know everything when I don't know anything. And that's what people are doing.
The one in that's going to be Sunday in Bridge City, that's the nasal?
That's the nasal test.
Okay.
Correct. So it's on your website. I saw it.
Yeah.
So forget the hours. But on Sunday, anybody without an appointment that's concerned that they may have infection can go to the location in Bridge City and be tested.
The antibodies test, if you test positive for that, does that mean that you've already had it and didn't know it, or?
So it means your body has seen it. No. So it means it's been in your body.
Okay.
You may or may not have been symptomatic, but it means your body has seen it and your body has tried to fight against it. And then your body keeps a memory of what it's fought against. And so that next time it sees it, it'll be a little bit better. Now, we used to think, okay, well, if you saw it once, it's like an immunization. You can't get it after that. Well, there's been some cases where people have had it twice. So more than likely, if you have the antibodies, you have some degree of protection. Doesn't mean you're not going to get it, but you're probably better than the person who hasn't, that doesn't have the antibodies.
Okay.
Doesn't change anything. You still got to protect yourself and protect other people. So, like I said, that test is better. In my mind, that test is better for us in the medical community looking back and trying to piecemeal things together. It doesn't tell you a lot as a patient, you know, what you have at the moment or how to proceed forward. It's not that helpful, I don't think.
And again, I think we talked about this last time, but I wanted to reiterate it as far as I know washing the hands is something that's important, but, you know, we've had people ask and say, okay, you coughed on my hand. if I put the hand sanitizer on, does it kill it, or does it have to be that you have to cough in my face or one of my orifices to cause the?
Well, I think directly in the face is probably the most contagious way. But if the virus is in secretions and the secretions go quickly from a hand to a mouth, I would think there's some degree of contagiousness to that. So I'm still a big fan of washing your hands as many times as you can a day. If you can't do that, use sanitizer. Put a mask on if you're going to be within 6 feet of someone for an extended period of time. Socially distant as much as you can. Now's probably not the time for large gatherings, if you can get away with it, until we see this recent rise start to slow down a little bit.
And we haven't. We've seen these numbers continue to go up. I think we released the numbers yesterday. We're at 191, so we're up. And when you think about how many people in the county, and you think, okay, we're up 60 cases in the last 2 weeks, doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it is compared to where we were in the month of May.
Yeah, where the concern comes, if you start to extrapolate it forward, the numbers get really big, right? So
yeah,
it's not that big now, but if we keep going at this rate, it's going to be big. And I think that's what you worry about when you look at the cities of Houston and Beaumont, where the hospitals are starting to get close to capacity again. That's where you start to worry. It's like, yeah, we're good now, but if this keeps up, we're not going to be good in 3 or 4 weeks. So that's why you have to be proactive and kind of pump the brakes a little bit ahead of time to try to slow this thing down.
Okay. Anything else, Doc, that I hadn't covered that you want to talk about?
So a couple of things real quick, Gary. One of them is serious and one of them is kind of tongue-in-cheek. The serious thing is what I'd like to end with is I saw this online where somebody said, wearing a mask doesn't make me weak, scared, stupid, or even controlled. It makes me considerate. That really hit me because I see people go around, I think there are some people who don't want to wear a mask because it makes them look scared, or it makes them look weak, or it makes you look silly. It would be nice if we could turn that around where we felt good about wearing a mask. So that if we could get a few more people wearing a mask when they're out in public, just for now, just for a short period of time till we can slow this down, because I think it does help. I think if we could just turn out the appearance and we feel a little bit better about wearing a mask, I think that would help. I think too many people just have this complex about going out and wearing a mask that maybe it makes them look weak, or it makes them look like, oh, I'm scared, I'm going to get it. That's not what it's about, right? We put one on to protect the other people. We're being considerate to the 80-year-old grandmother that has to go out shopping and she's scared to death because she's got chronic lung disease. So we're just being considerate to the other people we're coming in contact with. That's what I'd like to end with. I'd like to see us turn that appearance around.
Well, there's going to be a meeting tomorrow. Do we need to do what Jefferson County's doing?
Well, that's going to be a decision that's going to have to be made. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
And quickly, because you mentioned it, a lot of people, complain that they're going to do it for a week in Jefferson County. Well, what's that going to do? It's just 6 days. It could do a lot, right?
Yeah. Every little bit helps.
Yeah.
And so, I think you put your toe in the water and test the temperature and see what happens. I think part of it gives the Jefferson County a chance to see, hey, how's the public going to respond to this? Are they participating? It's going to be hard to see a change in numbers in that short period of time, but you might see a change in numbers. But, I think it's a baby step towards trying to slow things down.
You of course, run the or oversee the Orange County Health Department. It always seems like our numbers are different than what, the state has. And then we even thought we had a different number. Then all of a sudden the numbers come out yesterday and they're completely different than what we thought they were. Is that just because information hasn't passed quick enough between the two sources, or?
Well, it's because there's so many places testing now that it's hard to keep up. In the beginning, we only had one or two places testing, so it was pretty easy to get the numbers. Now, any clinic that wants to run the test can run the test. And so if you think about all the urgent cares, ERs, doctor's offices, nurse practitioner clinics, there's just so many places now, it's just harder to gather the information.
And are they required to tell the Department of Health every test they give, whether positive or negative?
They are, if they have a suspected case, they're supposed to report it. Now, does that happen? I don't know.
So they're not necessarily reporting cases that are negative?
When they order the test, if there's a suspect, it's supposed to be reported that we're testing a suspected patient.
Okay.
Okay, on a lighter note, Gary,
okay,
we got the Saharan dust coming.
Yes.
It's going to give some people the sniffles, probably.
Right.
It's going to give them the COVID symptoms, right? Everybody's going to think they have the COVID again.
Right.
It reminds me of when you know somebody around you that's got poison ivy, you start itching.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You see someone out there that's got the sniffles and got the cough, and all of a sudden you start thinking you're picking it up. Just remember, the vast majority of things out there that cause the sniffles are not corona or not COVID. If you start feeling sick, if you have any questions, go to your doctor, ask the professional what's the right thing to do. We get into trouble when we start doctoring ourselves.
Okay. Buddy, we appreciate you coming in. I know you've been busy trying to keep your head straight with all the questions you've been getting. So we thank you for coming in this morning.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. All right. Thank you, buddy. Mm-hmm. That's Dr. Calvin Parker here on KOGT.